Now, last Friday, we spoke to Katrina Costello, who made that beautiful two-part documentary called The Burn, Heart of Stone. The second and final part was on Sunday. It's still available to watch on the player. And a thing that caught a lot of people's attention was the fact that our ancestors may have been dark-skinned with blue eyes. Dr. Lara Cassidy, assistant professor at Trinity College, featured in the documentary. And here to tell us more about that, she's on the line. How are you doing, Lara?
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
Good to talk to you.
You too.
I believe we met before.
Yes, a very long time ago. I think when I was about 7.
Right, okay. Did you win an award or something, or what was it?
In poetry, yes, a poetry award.
Very
but
good.
I quickly abandoned that.
And went into genetics. Okay.
Yes.
So, beautiful. Wasn't an amazing documentary series? I know there were only two parts, but it was amazing, wasn't it?
It was spectacular.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. It looked like something that you travel thousands of miles to see, but it's in our backyard.
It's there on our doorstep, yeah. And will you explain to people why the burn is so important to people like you?
Me, particularly as an ancient geneticist.
Yes.
The burn's a fantastic archaeological landscape. I think everybody probably saw that in the documentary, but it's specifically good for us because it's an excellent preserver of DNA. And there's a few reasons for that. One of the main ones is the limestone. DNA does not fare well in acidic conditions. Well, with our limestone, it's slightly alkaline. So that's brilliant. And then with our megalithic tombs, like you can almost think of a megalithic tomb as a sort of like an artificial cave and a bit of a fridge in a way. Like it's dark, the temperature more dry, the temperature stays relatively stable, and all of those things are really good for DNA preservation over millions of years. Or not millions, millennia.
Thousands of years, yeah.
Yeah.
So as a result, there are rich pickings for research.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 years or so, things have come on in leaps and bounds when it comes to forensics and genomes, etc.
It's a bit mind-boggling. I find it hard to keep up, and it's meant to be my job.
Right, so, okay. So give us an idea of the big advances in the last 10 or 15 years.
Huge. And it's amazingly cross-disciplinary in a way. You know, it's coming into all areas, like you say, medicine, law enforcement, archaeology.
Yeah.
And also we have the rise of all of these personal ancestry testing companies too. So I think everybody's been well exposed to genomics at this stage.
Yeah. So you can take the bones that have been hugely well preserved in the burn and look at them and find out really sort of detailed things about our ancestors from 10,000 years ago.
Yeah. And that's because the genome, our human genome, it's just so rich in information, right? Your genome isn't just about you. It's about all of your genetic ancestors as well, right? It holds all of that information about, you know, your recent and deep population history.
Yeah.
And then also our genome, you know, one metaphor is it's like an instruction manual, right? It's the instructions to create and maintain a human body.
Mm.
So we have all of this information, and if we can manage to piece together the genome of a prehistoric person, we can learn a huge amount.
Okay. And from that genome, you can say with some certainty that the people who were living on the burn 10,000 years ago were dark-skinned and blue-eyed.
So this would be our Mesolithic population. So our two Irish hunter-gatherer individuals would be about 6,000 to 7,000 years.
Right.
And they don't have any of the variants we associate with light skin today. So our best prediction is that they would have had very dark skin, but they do have a set of mutations that are associated with blue eye color, and a lot of the predictive techniques would say this would be a blue color in some individuals, so that would have been circulating in the population. So yeah, it's a phenotype that we don't see.
Okay.
Today.
So when you discovered that, whoever discovered it, were you surprised?
Yeah, well, there have been other European hunter-gatherers genomes published from the West. So we'd seen it for Cheddarman in Britain, who's a good few thousand years older than our guys. And then we'd seen it for a genome from Spain and Luxembourg as well. So it was adding Ireland to the map. And our Irish hunter-gatherers, they are part of this sort of ancestral continuum that you see across Western Europe at that point in time.
And where did they originate from? Where did they come from originally? Where was the...
So what they're probably our best idea now is that these would have been the descendants of populations that expanded up probably from regions around Italy as the ice melted. So as we come into the Holocene and Europe, the thaws, I suppose, forests reclaimed the landscape, and we got our Mesolithic cultures who would have found a lot in these forests and new aquatic environments to eat. And
were we attached to Europe at that stage or not?
No, so Ireland became an island that sea level modelling would predict quite quickly after the ice sheets retreated, which is very different to Britain, which remained attached to Europe, I suppose, via the Doggerland bridge until quite late into its hunter-gatherer period. And you can see that in the genomes of Irish hunter-gatherers. It seems like the sea was a relatively strong barrier to gene flow. So our Irish hunter-gatherer population appears more isolated than those we find in Britain.
So then around 6,000 years ago, the agriculture came in from Turkey. Is it? Yeah. So that was a good old trip for them, wasn't it? But they just spreading, you know.
It took a long time.
It took a long time, yeah. They didn't just go.
So this isn't somebody, you know, hopping on a plane. So, agriculture has its roots in the Middle East and modern-day Turkey. And you have expansions into Europe starting about 6,500 BC. Mm-hmm. And it takes a few millennia. It takes a while, but they come all the way through the continent and eventually end up at the very northwest. And this, well, you know, this new early farmer ancestry, we'll call it, that makes up about 80 or so percent of the Irish Neolithic population or Irish early farmers. So this was a very large-scale migration. It took a while, but it's a lot of new people on the move and coming into Europe and eventually reaching Ireland
and the Burren. Have you any idea what the population of Ireland was at the time, around 6,000 years ago?
Oh, the size of the population?
Yeah.
So for the hunter-gatherer population, that's debated. You can try estimate how many people the land would have supported. Some estimates put it down as only maybe 1,000 people during the hunter-gatherer period.
Right.
Other people, 10,000, maybe more. But with the Neolithic, we definitely have a population boom. Again, estimates vary. It can be controversial. I think I hear some figures about 100,000 people.
Okay.
But maybe more, but definitely a big increase. So the indigenous hunter-gatherer population seems to have been relatively swamped.
So that would explain why there are no remnants of their genome in us.
Yes, exactly that. And or even we don't really see across our early farmer genomes much evidence of Irish hunter-gatherer ancestry, which is why this one individual that we have in the Burren who has somebody of that Irish hunter-gatherer population within their recent family tree. That's why he's so important, because it's a snapshot.
Yeah.
We're catching an interaction that we can't catch a few centuries later. You know, it seems that signal just gets diluted
quick. They were fading away. And you found that in Porknabinna core tomb. That's where that...
Parknavinia, yes. Excavated by Carlton Jones.
It's fascinating. Thanks so much for talking to us, Dr. Lara Cassidy, Assistant Professor at Trinity College with the Smurfit Institute of Genetics. Thanks, Lara. That's it from us. Cormac is coming up on his own today. It's Tuesday. And just before we go, wise words from Tommy Travers's dad. Ray, my father always said, if you worry, you die. If you don't worry, you die. So why worry? Enjoy Tuesday evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow at 3.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.